Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. This is a Design for Living, a big book meeting for Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Sandy, and I am a compulsive eater, and I am your chairperson today. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. We start this meeting by remembering our common purpose, to extend the heart and hand of the OA Fellowship to those who still suffer. Let us be mindful of OA's Unity with Diversity policy, which respects our differences, yet unites us in the solutions to our common problem. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. Today, we are delighted to have Chuck F. from Canada joining us to share his experience, strength, and hope, focused on using the OA concepts in all of our affairs. Focus on the 12 concepts of service, which are found in Appendix 7 of the Big Book. The first paragraph of Appendix 7, AA's 12 Steps are Principles Fellowship, written by our co-founder Bill W. in 1916, Unity of the Fellowship. Written by our co-founder Bill W. in 1962, the 12 Concepts for World Service provide a group of related principles to help ensure the various elements of AA service structure remains responsive and responsible to those they serve. I would now like to welcome Chuck F. to our group to share on his experiencing using the AA concepts in all of our affairs.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Violet. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, everybody, for your service and bringing me to the meeting. What a topic, guys. What I wrote in my notes is, don't be boring. And I'm going to try not to be boring, and I'm going to try to bring in the 12 concepts of race service into my life. And I'm happy that I had some time to think about it. And, you know, we talk a lot about the traditions, bringing traditions to my life, our lives. Those concepts can be brought in, you know, just as well as I've seen. So what I'll do is, I understand, I'll share a little bit about my story. I think I have a positive story to share. And then maybe I'll talk a little bit about the concepts kind of grouped into the certain facets of my life, which involve service, work, family, action plans, things like that. But hopefully will not be boring. So, and it's kind of funny because I'm doing my little scan here. Not a lot of folks from Region 6. And we play like a little bit of a, in one of our, in our conventions, we do a Sunday morning session called Sex on Sunday Morning. And it's all to get kind of people involved. And the running joke is that it was a traditions workshop. We kind of drove people in, tricked them a little bit, and gave them some relationship advice using the filter of the traditions. So I thought it was pretty cute, a way of getting people involved in something they may not have signed up for, filtered through the actual topic. So I'm Chuck. I'm based in the suburbs of Toronto, in Canada. I am so happy to be here. I can say, you know, my program is so strong. I have entrusted my daughter to cook dinner on the barbecue, and I'm free to speak, which is really really funny. And she's all gung ho for it. I came into program in 2011. Before I came to program, I woke up every day, and on most days I was a little bit angry that I was still alive. And I remember, shit, I'm up alive again. I'm unable to control teenagers who walk into rooms as well. And I came to meeting, my first meeting, and greeted by three little old ladies who did exactly what I did and told exactly my story, and got me hooked in the program like I was hooked on the food. So I'll share what happened before and what happened and then what happened after, like what life is like now. In the past, before program, I was a compulsive overeater who had no real impact to my eating. And by that, I mean, my family was heavy. I came from the heavy branch of the family. They understood eating. They understood that we ate, and that's how we rolled. That's how our life was. You know, I'll give you some you know, highlights or lowlights, if you will. I remember being in grade eight, so that was age 14, wearing 2X clothing, forgetting about jeans, going into track pants for a grade of school, whole school year, going into school, just wearing track pants because jeans were just too restricting. My family life was such that, you know, my father left when I was 10. My mother was working two jobs, and I'm an only child, and she gave me some pocket change. So every day I was grabbing a full-size dinner, eating it as a kid, waiting for my mom to come home late, cook dinner, eat dinner, and then dessert. So like, really, I ate a lot. I ballooned up physically. I was huge. And really, from my life, that was fine. That was fine. I knew I was going to get girls, and I knew people laughed at me behind my back and sometimes in front of my back. To my face. But you know what? That's them. I have my family. I have my mother, and eventually I have my stepfather. They're here, actually. Just realized that now. And they loved me for who I was, and they were a bit of me, right? And the insanity of this disease is crazy. I would, you know, I would go and really just work. I'd go to school, come home, and just eat. And it was accepted. And we had just kind of just understood that this was life. You know, Buffalo is close to us. You want to go to the States to buy the cheap, big and tall clothes. So we would drive to Buffalo, buy all of our bigger and tallest clothes, understand that you would go up a size every 6 months, because that's normal, and not understanding that this is not normal, right? So not understanding that this is not normal, right? So, you know, basically that was my life until, you know, maybe 25, right? I got married in between. I was very heavy. My wife accepted me as being very heavy. That's okay. You know, I'm sure she would love to change me, but, you know, was powerless because I made life hell. We tried to weigh and pay for once. I made her life hell because I'm not going to be told what to do around my comfort. So really what changed? What changed was, you know, the impacts of that living my cocoon, my parents. My mother and my stepfather, they suffered because of this disease. And so I remember my stepfather was unemployed for 10 years before he died. And one day I got a call from my mom saying, "Dad just stopped." And he starved himself. He was in a hospital. And he was not conscious and not communicative, and they basically said, you know, there's nothing there, we have to just end this. And for a week and a bit, he just languished in pain, not able to, like, they moved him, you heard him kind of cry out. And we sat watch over him. We had a rotation schedule of sitting watching for him. And of course, you know, because I think he was one of us, he had a nice stash of candy in his bag that he went to the hospital with. And I ate that candy while watching over him. And he passed, thankfully, with my mother there and myself there and my stepbrother there. And I'll tell you this story because it's really, you know, and talk about insanity. My aunt, well, was a lover, came back with a dozen donuts. And if Canadian donuts are your thing, well, that was a lover, came back with a dozen donuts. And if Canadian donuts are your thing, and we put this dozen of donuts, we're all sitting around my father who's passed, and we put the dozen donuts on his legs. And we're eating and telling stories about him. And we get to the last one. And if you're doing your math, there's four of us there worth a dozen donuts. And we get to the last one, and it's Dad's favorite flavor. And we're like, do we eat this? And as my stepbrother reaches over to grab it, you know, sometimes bodies make noise when they pass. And he made a ghoulish sound, like just a growl. And I think sane people don't eat food off of people who've passed. And if you're the last donut is there for Dad, then you don't eat it. But I'm not a sane person around food, right? I am just not right when it comes to food. And that's okay. My father passed, you know, he frothy emotional appeals, right? He pleaded with me, please don't be this way. Please don't be with her this way. And I think if you've had that to you, you're like, okay, I won't be this way. I won't be this way. And if I go forward a year, heavy people don't get checked up by the doctor because we don't like the lectures. I think you can, hopefully you can relate to that if you're, you know, a very heavy person, if you were or are a very heavy person. My mother had a skin cancer that was the most easiest to deal with in her breast. And after a year or two of pure denial, my wife, who is used to dealing with strong people, got her to a hospital, and less than a year, she had passed due to this very simple form of skin cancer that you can deal with in a outpatient thing. And that's the cost of this disease. And she sat in this room in a huge bed for while she withered away. And she promised to me, Chuck, please fix yourself. And I did this thing. I said, yeah, well, but frothy emotional pills never work, right? She had passed the day after Boxing Day. And that is just the floor falling from me moment. Because this is my mother. This is the person who I only lived with for these years. And she was the alpha. And, you know, we had the wake at our home. And I remember people brought food. And I remember just blowing through that food. And I waited 2 months because we heard of Overeaters Anonymous and Mike and Molly. And I had 2 months of seeds in here before I actually went. And I went to the meeting and I'm like, I got to tell you, sorry, I didn't tell my stats. I came in plus 500 pounds. The hospital weighs you when you go into surgery in the receiving corridor, right? Where they bring in the transport trucks. So plus 500 pounds. I could have been 530, 550. My waist was 66. My shirts were 5X tight, 6X normal. They were all stained from food, of course. I still have a problem with staining for food. I'm a bit of a slob. But I eat astronaut food when I stain my shirts. And I came into this meeting. I must have looked like a 500-pound man. And I walk into the church. And the guy looked at me. And there was a Al-Anon meeting next door. And there was an OA meeting next door. He looks at me and goes, "Overeaters Anonymous?" Like, yeah, that way. So let's get sent in. Four little old ladies hugged me. Oh my goodness. I never got hugs. We hug. I love that we hug. I hope we hug after COVID. I hope it's done soon and we can get back together and hug. But I love, you know, little lady hugs. And they shared my story. Go to the store, buy two ice creams, come back with one. What happened to the other one? You know, all that kind of things we do. And whatever they said flipped a switch. I came in February 13th. On February 14th, I got guilt-tripped in eating a cookie. And so my abstinent date is February 16th of 2011. And I've been kind of, you know, really faithful to the program, and I've been abstinent since. And I ate this program like I ate the food. Surprise, you can imagine, at work, not too productive. So I was listening to podcasts while doing my work. I was listening to big book studies and taking notes while at work. I did my fourth step in an Excel, you know, both at work and mostly at home. You know, I set it up so that I can sort my resentments and see how they looked and, you know, all that good stuff. You know, I got a sponsor, my sponsor, and I really suggest if you're a new member, getting a sponsor who is like a chair of intergroup, because within 2 months I was doing service at intergroup and he was dragging me there, and it started a life of service for me in program. And then I went to the gym and I ate 3 meals a day and the weight just peeled right off because let's be honest, I'm a man. And I was 35 at the time and I'm 47 now. And really I just, you know, ripped through it. I did, you know, working out 5 days a week. I had a nice food plan. Weight just dropped off. I'm a bit cheap. So I kept on getting my pants going into the place and having them hem them. And I got to the point where my front pockets were in my butt. So I'm like, okay, I need to buy new pants. And then I realized, you know, I didn't want to give the Big and Tall store any more money because the pants are 3 times the size, price, I should say. I'm like, I didn't want to give the Big and Tall any more money. So I just wore these pants and kept on shortening, you know, hemming them. And so, and then I did a life of service, right? You know, I redesigned a website for Central Ontario. Pretty much did, you know, all of, you know, every little role if that they asked me to do, because for some reason, you know, I became very teachable in this program. You know, I do my prayers and meditation, and I get to learn things, and I get to learn that other people have opinions that all people have opinions that are worth considering. And a lot of people have opinions that I need to take into account and I need to follow. And they're putting my way for, you know, because of higher power. Right. And that's really worked out. You know, and pretty much, you know, currently I am, you know, I've been in this program for, you know, 11 years or so, and life hasn't been tickety-boo, right? Quick check, make sure no one's listening. you know, I've had, you know, separation from my wife early on. And I come to the realization that it's not everything is my fault, or B, I can fix it, right? And, you know, a few months later, we got back together. We're pretty strong. And, you know, my three kids, same thing. You know, not everything has been perfect. I've had to let things go. I've had to, you know, my middle child has really strong mental health issues, where she's attempted self-harm and attempted suicide. And we've had to go into that youth mental health ward for visits at 4 o'clock every day, and 5 o'clock every day, and you get kicked out at 6:30 or 7. You know, it's so difficult because you're there, and you know, you can't bring in certain things, and you know, things like that. And it's like, wow. And I would never thought I'd be in an adolescent mental ward twice. But that's my life, and I turn that over. I turn that over. And life, hey, it's not easy sometimes. I have two in-laws, a wife, three almost teenagers. All of them are teenagers, and two dogs in this house. We're gonna clash sometimes, and it's gonna happen. But this program has taught me that the clashes are the clashes, and I can bring myself to it, and I can't control the family, right? I'm gonna talk about the concept, but really the concept of, hey, you know, I can peel, right? Daddy, you're the daddy, but I have a voice, and I want to let my voice be heard. You know, and it's my job to kind of say, okay, well, let's listen to you, right? And then let's check with firepower and make a call on that. And that's my life today. You know, and I will say that, you know, life is really good. My work, my career, now that I'm not thinking about food, because after my mom died, oh my goodness, my coworker mentioned it to me. She's like, you were eating a lot of candy when your mom died. I'm like, really? No kidding. And I remember like stuffing it, you know what we do. We take the paper and put it on top and stuff it in so nobody can tell. It's like, no kidding. But my life now is one where I follow my higher powers guidelines. Most of the times I work, my career has taken off. I'm very happy in my job, and I'm very happy in my life, despite having, you know, these various difficulties. And, you know, I'll end with this a little bit, and with saying, okay, well, I had taken a break from that meeting because of vacations and various things. It's been a month. And when I went to that meeting, my home meeting, my first meeting, I remember that the old guy, he looked at me, and he goes, Al-Anon? And I went to meeting, he goes, Al-Anon? I'm like, no, I'm in OA. I'm in Over Ears and Anonymous. So let's go to, you know, the OA section. But I think that's really pressing of this guy looked at me and didn't automatically assume I was in OA, which is a blessing. More importantly, the blessing is like my kids love me. Right? My kids get it. And they get the program, right? They're not in this playroom, which is my office at work. Because they get it. You know, my first summer I was in program, and you know, Canadian summers are short, and you know, you squeeze what you can out of it. I remember my first summer in program, I was going to a Monday meeting. It was beautiful outside. I just finished dinner, and my daughter, she looks at me and goes, you know, I'm saying I'm about to leave, and she goes, Daddy, do you need to go to these meetings? And I said to her, you know, I paused, and I got a higher power, you know, thing. And it's, you know, inspiration, because it's not coming from me. And I looked at her and said, you know, is Daddy a better daddy since going to these meetings? And her at 8 looked at me and goes, yeah, you go to these meetings, you go. And I think that's the blessing of the program. And that's my story. I'm here and I'm here for the long haul. And the program has saved my life. I'm grateful. So I'm going to go into a little bit about the concepts. In full admission, my timer did not start. My timer didn't start. No, I didn't start the timer properly. I thought I did, but I didn't. But I'm going with about 25 minutes left. So I'm going to go into a little bit of concepts about how a few things that I've discovered just in kind of topics of my life work out the way the concepts wrote, right? So, I shared a little bit about how, my kids have mouths on them. They know how to advocate for themselves. So really, I took a lot of the, the way that my role, in the service organization of a family, I have an inverted pyramid where, I'm here to support my kids. My wife is here to support my kids. We're together on the same level, of course. And one of the things is, everybody gets to say, right? We're all equal. Yes, daddy works, daddy pays the bills, daddy's a daddy, right? But you get to give me an opinion on what we should do, right? And I'm not saying vape, right? There's some things, I'm not gonna go and, start smoking tobacco, but right, if you want this or that, or you have an opinion about what we do, right, then you're part of this, and you're part of the group that we all, I'm not a ruler, right? I'm not a dictator, and I can't be changed, right? And luckily enough, we were in we went to Europe in the early spring. And the kids were like, we really want to do, I said, I really want to go visit the catacombs. And they're like, no, we just want to check out the arts district. I'm like, okay, fine. I'm outvoted by 4-1. We're going to go to the arts district. It's fine. Like that's how it works in our family. But I also have a role of kind of a guidance, right? Of being a someone who's been through some things. Right. So my oldest daughter, who's 17, poor girl, she has a learning disability. And I said to her, honey, you're going to have to try twice as hard to get the same result. And she's like, does the twice as hard and gets the same result. She made honor roll. She made Ontario Scholar. That's like your higher grade acknowledgement. I'm like, how did this happen? I'm so proud of you. She got into the school she wanted to go to was didn't allow her in. She got a denial. She wanted to do a sustainability and at University of Toronto, but she was looking at the arts program. There we have an arts college. She was going to the arts school. And I'm like, I'm sure this is a worldwide thing. Housing is not cheap. There's a reason they're called starving artists. I'm like, honey, I go for your passions, but you gotta pay a bill sometime, right? And that's gonna be your life. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm like hesitantly supporting with a little bit of forced grin because I'm a little bit worried that she's gonna do 4 years or a school and not have the ability to be employed. Well, 2 weeks ago, she got, they let her into the program she wanted. And my wife is a bit of an artsy person. I'm more kind of based on facts and hardcore kind of like, worrying about your career and planning and things like that, which is all God's plan anyway. So I'm like, honey, it is up to you. And I said to my wife, it's up to her. You go do things. And she did a pros and cons list and she made a decision and I had nothing to do with it. And she made a decision to go into the, University of Toronto. She's doing sustainability. It's something she's like, hopefully she gets, a good job of it, or she may quit and go be an artist. It's all iron bearer. But that's her life. I got to turn it over. My agreement is to pay the tuition. That's it. You know, and that's the same thing, the way we work with our family, right? I hate saying the word fat. But there's this old line from like my big fat Greek wedding, where the man says, I'm the head of the household. And the woman goes, well, I'm the neck that turns it and tells you where to go and what direction. I'm like, okay, well, that's how it works, right? And sometimes I have to deal with, I'm checking to see if they're listening, by the way. Oh, crap, there's someone there. But I'm checking to see if someone's listening. I'm like, well, you know, we're not perfect. We're all individuals. And she, my wife, wanted to design something a certain way outside in our patio. And I said, well, think about it, come back and let's talk about it. Well, on Thursday, she did it. I'm like, okay, well, and it looks great, right? It wasn't my way. We didn't talk about it. She did it. Looks great. Okay, fine. You know, we'll let this one go. I'm not in charge, right? And I think I'm not in charge. And yeah, it's one of those things where in the past I had to be in charge and you had to have my way. And I had to win, right? I had to win. We all had to win. Yeah, trust the 500-pound guy who's wearing the track pants and the stained shirts. He can tell you which way to go. But like, you know, it's such a dichotomy. I'll go into a little bit about work, because work for me, you know, as being someone who is doing a great job doing it half time because I was so underperforming, to being, you know, I've moved up like 3 or 4 levels, tried almost double my salary, and like doing really well. And, you know, I bring those concepts of service into my life at work, right? Of course, everything's faith above all, right? So I do, you know, I bring my higher power into work. I have to. There's no option, because my higher power is in my life. I have to pray before doing certain things, right? And I have to pray for the right thing to do. And I have to remember the old AA, because I do expense reports now, and you know, padding the old expense report with various things. I'm like, okay, I'm completely aware that padding an expense report is theft. Right. Where I see other people do it, that's okay. That's them. I stay in my own lane. And I know that if I do the right things, the right, you know, the higher power's got me. Including a career change, a complete career change last year. And I went into sustainability. So my daughter's going into sustainability as in the school. I'm in sustainability at work. You know, like, and it's kind of a caring job, right? I think a lot of us are carers in that way. But I stay in my lane, right? But I try to help out when I'm asked, which is pretty funny, because I get that a lot. I'm like, if I see someone on their team kind of struggling, you know, sure. I mean, you have your own lane, and I'm going to ask you if I can help out, but I'm going to go and help you. It's not on my goals and objectives that you need help. I'm helping you. Just like if the neighbor needed help, I would help them as well. And I think a little bit about, you know, a lot about bringing the concepts of service to my service in a way. And I have a very like kind of lengthy service career that started probably about 6 months into program. I was doing, as soon as I could go into the intergroup, I was at intergroup. But I know that the same thing of being, you know, kind of the staying in my lane, doing my job. I'm a webmaster for the OA Region 6 web service. You know, I'm not in PI, right? I'm not in, public information. I'm not in outreach. If I'm asked about my opinion on those things, I refer to, you know, that chair for that, for the region, you know, it's just turning it over and just doing my work. And I think a lot of, and it's not, a, well, it might be related to concepts, but just trusting your higher power. You know, we run conventions where, you know, we're kind of looking at each other going, are we going to get the people we need to sign up in the hotels so that we can all be together without having to pay thousands of dollars? I'm like, guys, I mean, I'm chairing the committee. I'm like, guys, God's in charge. God's in charge. And that, you know, if I'm chairing a committee, especially for a convention, God's in charge. Keynote speaker didn't show up. God's in charge. We have 500 people here. 300 of them probably have the ability, the requirements. We'll find somebody. It took us 20 minutes. We found somebody. God's in charge, you know. And it is what it is. I also like the concept around, you know, perilous wealth and more importantly, power. Because I have to really link that to my work, where in my work, I want more responsibility so I can get more things and do more things and expand my role and get people to work for me and all that stuff. Perilous wealth and power, right? My job is to make sure the website looks good and updated, make sure the convention, chairing a convention committee, so you're chairing a bunch of committee leads, getting rid of hurdles. You know, it's not me to look over at the intergroup outreach guys and go, can I take over your department? Which is what I might do at work if that's something that, you know, I felt needed to be done. And it's just being my best. She'll be fine. He'll be fine. If he's not fine, we're going to help out. But until that time, no, it's not. And also, you know, you got to bring in traditions to this too, as well. In that, you know, I think I don't know if you know the quote, so something to the effect of, if you haven't met a jerk in meetings, then you haven't been to enough meetings. You know, and that same thing applies at the intergroup and region level. I know when I have an email notification from 5 people, I can go, oh, God, what is this crap again? And that's my first reaction. I'm like, wait a second, you're just a bum on the bus. We're all just bums on the bus, with higher power driving. And I'm like, your voice, however different it is equal to anybody's voice, right? And it needs a good grievance, good viewing that is not biased in any way from previous interactions with people. And I think one of the things is, you know, we're at group at either intergroup or region level, we'll talk about these things and we're like, what about this person? And I think the best thing to say is, wow, she really does have a point, to look through all of the kind of history and go, yeah, that email written in a very unpeaceful way, she's right. She is absolutely right. And pardon my French. Shit. She's absolutely right. It's too early to say that, isn't it, in Australia? I also like the concept of substantial unanimity. Of 51% doesn't make something correct. It might pass something, but it doesn't make it correct. And I tried bringing that concept to the, if you're involved with any like parent teacher associations at your kids' schools, I tried bringing that concept there. And these guys aren't in program. I'm like, really, can we talk about this a little bit more later on? We have some time. It's like, no, 51% did it. Okay. Like the concepts of service are 12-step concepts. They're not for the outsiders. Or the normies, if you will. And also, I think I'm almost done. But I think something recently about the concepts have really come into play. You know, so, you know, in Canada, we've been really locked down. The gyms have opened up. And as somebody who would go to the gym 5 days a week as part of my kind of action plan, with COVID, I found it very difficult to get my workout in. Even though I work from home now, I found it very, it was jarring. It was a different thing. So finally this week, I went to the gym, right? As opposed to the first time when I was 35, now I'm 47. To what the trainer said, I don't look 47, which I will take. All about humility, right? And I went with my daughter the first workout, and she's 14. And we did our workout, and I was, Hank's using the word crippled, I was very, very sore an hour later. Because men don't stretch, as a rule. Not as a rule. Smart men stretch. I don't stretch. And she goes, well, I'm okay. And you're like, you're 14. But then working a little bit with a trainer who I would consider, you know, a trusted servant who wants to get paid, right? And that's okay. They're working for me. But I got to take that humility and go, wow, I could work out like a beast, you know, 2.5 years ago. And now I need to kind of get back into things with when it comes to lifting weights, because lifting weights are different than running, different from walking. And I'm going to rebuild new muscles. I'm going to rebuild old muscles. And that takes humility. And that takes knowing that there are people who know more than I do about this. And people who I can learn from. And I'm being tremendously honest again, I can't afford that training, but it's something that, you know, maybe we'll work on. And I think one of the things, I'm gonna share a story. And it's not related to the concepts, but it is kind of related to my program. Oh, well, this is definitely related to my program. The first few months of abstinence, I was walking very much on a treadmill during the rush hour at the gym around 5 o'clock. And I'm sweating away, just dying. And then a few seconds later, I'm like, do you smell something? I'm like, do you smell something? I'm like, what is that? And apparently the treadmill had had enough. And caught on fire. Oh shit. Here's this guy. I'm 500 pounds. I'm. And he's like, what? The treadmill caught on fire, as in it's poof, 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 and shut it down, and wholly embarrassing. I can tell you pre-program, Chuck working on some diet thing, going to the gym, I am not showing up for another months. Months I'm not showing up. But I had it over with my higher power, and it's like, well, this is life. You work out, and sometimes machines break, and sometimes they catch on fire, because that's how it is. And I was there the next day. And like, that doesn't happen without higher power checking in on me and giving me some good guidance, right? And I can say I've never had a machine caught on fire. Ever. You know, I am prone to lifting my ego and not stretching, but nothing caught on fire yet. Which is good. I think I will end there. But I think when it comes to really the concepts, they're there as guidance, right? And honestly, I have them on my screen. The screen. I have my notes here. I have my my Zoom over here. And if you look at the, you know, the principles behind the 12 concepts service, you know, equality, trust, conscience, consideration, responsibility. Those are things that, you know, my higher power wants of me. And I know that when I listen to my higher power, and I don't shrug away the first thought that is not mine, then I know that if I can listen, you know, I'm able to continue on and know that I'll be guided and things may happen, and that's okay. Because my higher power's got me. And with that, I'll stop. Thank you for letting me talk.
Thank you so much, Chuck, for your honesty and vulnerability in sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us today. We will now be transitioning into a question and answer segment. I'd like to introduce Dean, who is our moderator today. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you. Thank you, Chuck, for doing service today and coming to the to our meeting and speaking on this subject, which I had to look up. And I saw that the I saw there's a lot of words in the concepts. And I had a little joke in the background with someone. Are we going to post these concepts? And we kind of thought that there was probably, you know, if we did that, it would they're quite big. So I'm very grateful for what I heard today. It kind of narrowed it down for me because I'm not great with long strings of words. So I've got some questions here. I am a compulsive overeater, a grateful member of this. It's my home group, and I'll start off with the first one. It mentions it's about concept 10. So you can all scramble now and quickly look at what concept 10 is. And paraphrasing, every service responsibility should be matched by an equal service authority. Can you talk a bit more about how we match these in our relationships? What do you think service authority might translate to in a personal relationship?
Two and a half years, still haven't got the mute button. To me, that means balance, right? To me, that means linking up to kind of a governance role in that, okay, and probably the most blatant one is, obviously one is treasurer. So our Region 6 treasurer has the power to, you know, do things with money, but she also reports to a committee of members who are also kind of just there, who also double check and ensure that it's working okay. Because we all kind of have our own, how we do our service, but we do need some kind of authority, right? We do need opinions on how we do our service, but we do need some kind of authority, right? We do need something that says, I don't think that's the right way to do it. Or maybe just a double check. You know, did you misspell a word, right? You know, and I think we look at the concept, the principle behind it, concept 10 is clarity, right? Are we all clear on what we need to do in our service responsibilities? When it comes to my home life, and actually I'll use a work example, because all of my work is double checked by a different department who will like audit kind of what I say and what I do and making sure I'm not making things up, right? At a home level, it's, I'll give you a feeling. Son's in the room. My son's 12. He's a very smart fellow, but during COVID and working from schooling at home, his homework didn't get done. And I'm talking for 8 weeks. We didn't have that balance of mommy and daddy checking, because he was basically lying to us about his homework being done. And it made for a very interesting parent-teacher interview that term. So that's a shame on me. And it's a fix that we fix now, right? Because I have access now to his account, so I can check to see if there's homework done. So both those options. it's a balance of making sure that our trusted servants are doing what they need to, as opposed to what they want to do.
Great, thank you. Can you share any insights into how we navigate personal and family relationships when the family members are actively hostile?
Actively hostile to the program itself, or?
I can affirm that, to the program itself, please.
Yeah, I think that's, I have no relation with that. My family is incredibly supportive. My wife had 3 very young kids and sent me away to meetings, sent me away to retreats. Sometimes we had talks about it when it got too much, but in general, very helpful. That said, I can go up to my room and have my kids in my bed playing video games or whatever, and I will have a pillow that has chocolate stains on it. So not hostile, but an awareness that other people eat different foods than I do. And we'll leave the wrappers everywhere, my God. So I have no experience in hostility, but I can't say this. I'm my own person who can listen to a higher power. And hostility is just, maybe it's just love that's not in the right place. It's not, maybe it's not directed properly. Or maybe, you know, there are times where, you know, we need to stand up for ourselves and say that isn't right. And then I have experience with that, right? Like going to the dessert shop for dinner, right? I can go to the dessert shop after dinner and have a coffee while people are eating dessert. It doesn't bother me. But I need to eat dinner first, right? So I can course correct on that and say, this is what I need. This is my requirements for program. And if someone doesn't like that, then that's on them. And we'll have to balance it.
Thank you, Chuck. Concept 5, scramble, everybody. Right of appeal.
Yep.
How do you see this work in the context of business meetings / group conscience, where fellows have opposing opinions on a specific group issue?
You have to listen to each member as if they are their own membership, and they are. And I think the person who puts their hand up and is brave enough to put their hand up and say, I dissent, I disagree with this. Number one, it's super brave, you know, and you see it. I don't know if you see it in business meetings. I see it in business meetings where we all raise our hands. There's 20 people on my screen. 19 of them raise their hands. And then the last one will put their hand up because they don't want to have a proper vote. Like, the person who dissents is so brave that regardless of the bravery, it doesn't matter how brave they are, they all deserve a voice. And I can say that some of our changes have been because, for the best, have happened because somebody put up their hand. We have our region meetings, region 6 in the world goes from pretty much Ontario, Canada, all the way to the East Coast, down to New York State. It's a huge region with tons of people in it. And we had a debate. We were thinking actually having our spring assembly in person, right? And that might not have worked, because people would have had to cross the border. They need vaccine certificates. They may need testing, depending on when it is. You know, if that person, we had a person dissent, because we're already meeting in person, we had a person dissent and made a convincing argument that we all needed to be in virtual. And we all kind of shrugged and saying, well, that sucks. We you know, but they're the right person. That's totally the right argument, because our membership base is, you know, I hate to say it, membership base is a little bit older. We need to protect people. And that's, you know, we got to listen to everybody. and make sure they're heard, regardless of dissenting opinion, regardless of personality or history, I would say.
Thank you, Jack. Can you talk a bit more about substantial unanimity and the context of a business meeting?
Yep.
How do we stay sober and healthy in what seems like a conflict situation in an OA business meeting, group conscience meetings?
Yep. I think, well, the thing is, in the end, you know, a service body, almost all service bodies are nonprofit corporations or whatever the equivalent of where people live. At the end of the day, you need to have, if there's a 51% vote on something that can't wait, then you have to go forward with it because it can't wait. If there's something that is can wait and it's a 51% vote, well, we need to take some time and consider it. I've changed my mind over 51% votes because we went back, we revisited next month and it could wait. So there's definitely a balance that saying, you have to accept the 51% vote, or you can wait and see if people consider things differently the next meeting you have with them. Not talking about courses, but voting and things like that, voting for people in roles, elections. But I'm talking about general votes that if it can't wait, then, it can't wait. But in general, people need time to, lack of a better word, digest what's being presented to them. I'm one of those people who do, I can't be presented with a situation and give you the right answer right then. I need to take it back. Hopefully higher powers involved in some of that. And then kind of, I'll use the word digest again, and then put it back out there as to what the opinion is. And I've changed my mind too. I immediately gone into a debate with thinking A, and then going to B, did a world service in April. Where my mind was changed three times over something that I had the idea beforehand, because you get a book of everything that they're going to talk about and all the motions. I had a fixed concept. I changed it three times in the debate. Well, so you need the time, and we're not, we are a corporation, but we're not a corporate. We're not corporate. We're not governed, if we're going to use a word from the concepts. We're a membership that needs to take all this in consideration so we can spread the message.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks to this group. I was also at WSBC. I can't wait to have a private conversation about what I've heard today. I'm looking forward to that. I hope you have your number available at the end of the meeting.
Yes.
I'm still in therapy. I have a question here. Love how you applied the OA concepts to your family unit. Is there one concept or more that you struggle with, or one that does not seem to be a good fit for you? I assume that's in the family circle. One concept.
Well, the whole bylaw things of concept seven. We have no bylaws in my family, but we have laws, right? No, and honestly, actually, the real concept I have a problem with is the part where my wife and I have to draw a line, and my part of you're able to be independent and do things on your own. And as three teenagers, where do we govern, and where do we give you flexibility? Because I made the previous example of, I gave my son flexibility because I have two pretty responsible girls, and hate to say it like a boy, that didn't do the homework. We had no governance there, right? So we have governance that now when school begins, we'll watch out for it. So that's the balance I have trouble with now. But in the end, I can't do his homework for him. It's probably too complicated. Couldn't do the math.
Thank you. We had a question that somebody asked, and the answer's been posted in the chat. I'll just put that out there. Is that someone asked, what are the principles behind the concepts and what do they mean? So I think Joe has actually listed those, a link to it in the chat for you, for those of you that can actually access that. And there's a question to follow is, how do people in OA learn more about the concepts? Is there something they teach? Is there something they teach at WSBC or anywhere? I would add to that. Have you ever seen any teachings on these concepts?
So I know in our region, we have a what we call a service traditions and concepts workshop. And you're like, okay, it's not about a food plan or anything like that. It's actually service STC, service traditions, concepts. So there's training involved in that. Now, I don't know if it goes to all regions, but what I will do is I'll put my email in the chat. I'm pretty sure we have that that deck, if you will, on our website. But if anybody's interested, let me know. I'll get in touch with our trustee and you know, if there's something we can do virtually, hey, our trustee would love to be able to do that if your trustee, if you're in a different region, is not. But there's definitely training on it for sure. It's either at WSBC or the region level.
Wonderful, thank you. And thank you for your offer to pop your email in at the end. I know that will be a question coming up for you. I find some business meetings, group conscious meetings, not necessarily, of course, ours, stressful, and I prefer not to go, and then I feel guilty that I'm being selfish. Do you have any thoughts around this?
Yeah. I'm going to give you advice that he wasn't my sponsor, but somebody I look up to as a service person, because I raise the same issue. I'm like some things I just can't, I just don't want to deal with. If ever in a meeting, somebody didn't read the minutes, they insisted the secretary read out the minutes, a 2-page minutes. I'm like, oh my Lord, do we have to do this? And I kind of complained about this to a very trusted OA member. And pretty much what he said, for quite frankly, is you need discipline. It is my way that I want them to skip the minutes. It is my way that this person stop blabbering on about the $20 donation that we want to give to, you know, an intergroup to support them or a group to support them. And some things, my mind just, you know, there's the cuckoo clock in here going, I don't want to deal with this crap, you know, and he reminded me, and it was a great reminder of my higher power's will is to be in this meeting, right? If I need to spread the message, we do it through these service body meetings, and I need to have the discipline to sit through the BS, if you don't mind me saying so, if I need to sit through that. And be disciplined in doing that, just like I need to walk the treadmill when I don't feel like it, or stretch when after my workouts and I'm sore after. It's all a higher power doing. And the thing is that if I take that into account, 3 months later, the person may still be, yap, yap, yap. I'm better adapted at taking it, right? I've learned, right, to maybe even listen to them and take their opinion into account and kind of ignore how they're saying it and ignore even the person if I don't like that person and just get to what the heart of the issue is. But it's a discipline.
Thank you. You have talked about the idea of waiting before taking a group conscience decision. Can you talk more about deferring or waiting, how that might happen before taking a decision?
Do a motion. We do a motion to, I'll talk a little bit about the region work, because I really love what we do. we do a couple of things. One, if we get a heated debate or an election, where two or more people are joining, and that is becoming a rarer thing, which is unfortunate. We do two things. Number one, we do the serenity prayer. Somebody calls in calls the serenity prayer. It's just like a motion or a request for information or any of the Robert's rules. They call for the serenity prayer, and we're going to take a second and realize that we're in the room together for one purpose. And then secondly, if something makes sense to hold off on it, then hold off on it, right? Make a motion to say that we're getting heated here. We're very close, and I think we need to take this back and the next time, if we're available next time, to do it, right? And I'll give an example of something that it worked out in the end, but it was kind of a thing. So I wasn't on the board at the time for the region, but people had a little bit of a revolt when they come to, this is being taped. Ooh. And basically what they did is they, I'm going to use the word conspired, but that's not a conspiracy. They all agreed to kind of say, okay, you know what we're going to do? We really think that intergroup outreach is important. We're going to appropriate a large amount to this budget to intergroup outreach and kind of go around kind of the original plan from a board level. And I'm like, wow, they did that. And it was kind of revolutionary, right? And I wasn't on the board, but I could see the board going, like they're confused because they present a budget. They get it. And that was voted on. And it got a substantial unanimity. We didn't have to look at it. The fellowship said, that's what we want. We want money to go to intergroup outreach. Our poor treasurer slashed the budgets. It all worked out. Because sometimes when you have a budget, you don't use it all. So it worked out. Right. But the fact that they did like this little revolution thing, it worked out in the end because all of the fellowship said that's the right thing to do. And there's board to work on making it fit from a budget point of view. So hopefully that answered the question.
Thank you, Chuck. That was the last question. Thank you so much for bringing your experience, strength, wisdom, and hope to us today. I was meant to call a 5-minute board, but I didn't do that. So I'm just looking at the chat. If I don't see any last minute questions, we're going to wind it up because it was meant to be. We actually allocated an extra 10 minutes or so for this section, but we're finishing up a little bit early. I might hand back in that case to Sandy, wasn't it? Sandy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Dean. According to our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting through our own contributions. As we now have moved to virtual meetings, it's important that we continue to be fully self-supporting by contributing to our seventh tradition to OA.
Sandy. Yes. Sorry, I didn't scroll down far enough. There was one question left, and due to what we've heard about today, rather than me overriding it and thinking, well, I'll just let you carry on, the fact it's showing up, well, I will read it.
Go for it. Sounds good.
Right. It is a good question anyway. So we're going to screen share the principles for the concepts, behind the concepts. And what are the principles behind the concepts? And could you please talk to them for a moment? So here they are here. They're on the screen. Joanne's put those up for us. So could you please talk to them for a moment or two? We actually have up to 10 minutes, Chuck. Thank you.
There we go. Thank you. So I love the principles because I like being simple, right? So all these things like are gifts of higher power, right? So I think what about a few of them that bring to me, that come to me is concept three, trust. And that the concept is a right or decision based on trust makes effective leadership possible. I got to trust that people are doing their jobs, right? I can't look over their shoulder. I can't, if I'm not in a role to verify, because we had that other concept about verifying, if I'm not in a role to verify, it's their job, right? We trust in the people doing our service, right? And you're talking about WSBC, we saw that WSBC people, you know, calls were made, motions, et cetera, and we trust that the chair will do the right thing, right? And that's what we put them in the position for, right? My job at Region 6 is web and publications, right? Make sure the website's up to date, and I make sure that you know, our blog rules are up to date, et cetera. And my job is for, you know, that I get a vote, but I don't have a say in what things are and way things are run, but I don't have the ultimate authority for what they do, right? Unless it goes to a motion or something like that. So I trust that they will follow what they need to do, right? But also do that thing where they go trust but verify, which is number 10. So clarity, right? So our treasurer, like I said before, our treasurer has balanced the books and has somebody checking their books. Why? Because a few years ago, I understand it, way before my time, I understand decades ago, the treasurer wasn't being verified. And sometimes money goes missing. Right. So, and I understand that was eventually resolved. And I think one of the things, if we look at, you know, we had trust in somebody, we didn't verify, we didn't have clarity on what was in the account, funds were taken. Okay. Well, what do you do? Right. And I think, if you look at that, okay, well, look at this, look at the concept 12, right? Did the person have perilous wealth and power, you know, selflessness? Opposite of that is selfishness, right? Did the person have unqualified authority in number C and C? So representation, you have a check, you have a balance, right? And, you know, if you look at, say, E, which is compassion, no service action shall be personally impunitive or incitement to public controversy. Do you sue the guy who took a few thousand out of the coffers? You know, does that open up to controversy, right? Or do we take it as a lesson learned? Right. And that happens in service bodies more often than we think, because these concepts were not followed, because we didn't have a check to the balance the check. So I think I do like the principles, because it's a good reminder, of everything, of balance in our roles, and of, you know, the ability. You know, do not put me in a treasurer role. I can work Excel, but I will blank out on numbers and I will never balance anything. But I'll also know that when I'm done my service commitment in a year, this fall, I'm like, maybe I like being on this board a lot. What can I do? How else can I serve? And maybe I'll, you know, push, lack of a better word, my way on another role, maybe. But I'm not qualified to be a treasurer. You know, and that's something, just knowing that my abilities are such that I have certain abilities and I'm good at things, I'm not good at other things, right? So good reminders, I need to be reminding more of this, and as well as the principles for this, for the steps and traditions.
Thank you, Chuck. I get to get a second run at my little run of statements here, and that is somewhere around 8:50 a.m., which it is here now. It's nearly time to end the question and answer session. Thanks, Higher Power, for giving me this opportunity for today. We have about 5 minutes left, and I don't have a question there, but that doesn't mean that someone might be sitting there with just one that they could type quickly or something to me, the moderator. So I'm going to give someone the opportunity to do that. And if we don't see one pop up, then I'm going to read the 8:55 little note. This is so wonderful. Someone's given it to me and highlighted it in my color of favorite blue with little things. Thank you to that trusted servant that understands that I need help like this. And it was wonderful to, someone just asked me the other day, would I like to be treasurer for something? And I said, I didn't think of I can't do an Excel sheet, you know, but I have been an ex-bankrupt. I said to them, you probably don't want me looking after your group's money. You know, maybe that was a cop-out, but the Excel sheet is true. Well, so is the ex-bankrupt thing, but thank you so much, Chuck. I found it very entertaining, and who would have thought that I would have found that. So it is now 5 minutes to the hour, and a question of time has come to an end. Thank you so much to everyone for your questions, and to you, Chuck, for sharing your time and wisdom and humor and honesty with us today. I will now hand the meeting back to our chairperson, Sandy, to do the wrap-up, so it was meant to be. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dean. According to our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting through our own contributions. As we now have moved to virtual meetings, it's important that we continue to be fully self-supporting by contributing to our seventh tradition to OA. This allows OA to continue to carry the message to those that still suffer. You are able to send your donations through our website at www.ad4l.info. Thank you all for your support. It is greatly appreciated. A reminder that our Design for Living Big Book OA is a daily meeting. We are based out of Melbourne, Australia. 6:30 a.m. start Monday to Friday, and 7:30 a.m. start on Saturday and Sunday, and that's in Melbourne. Please check out our website for more information on the time zones, www.ad4l.info. Our next monthly speaker series will be held on Sunday, the 11th of September in Melbourne, and is a talk by a couple in OA sharing on their recovery journey together. We hope to see you there. In closing, I would like to thank Chuck and all of you for your service in coming here today. By following the 12 steps, attending meetings regularly, and using the OA tools, we are changing our lives. You will find hope and encouragement in Overeaters Anonymous. To the newcomer, we suggest attending at least 6 different meetings to learn the different ways OA can help you. The opinions expressed here today are for those individual members and do not represent OA as a whole. Please remember our commitment to honor each other's anonymity. What you hear here, whom you see here, when you leave here, let it stay here. Let us now all reach out by phone or email to newcomers, returning members, and to each other. Together we get better. To close the meeting, will Susan T. please unmute and read with the promises, which will be on the screen shared.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work from them.